A few minutes later, my mum pulls us aside and says to January,
"So, you're the neighbour."
"I am."
"Great.
I want to show you these cupboards that need a little bit of work, but I insist on paying you."
She beckons January into the kitchen. January shakes her head.
"I insist on you not paying me."
"No, I must. It's just how it is."
That's my mum, already diving into things, enlisting January in her life and doing it on her terms.
"You will not give me any money, Mrs. Harris."
From across the room, I call out, "Mum, you're not going to win this one." She tuts, shakes a finger at me, then says,
"Oh, yes, I am."
January flashes me a smile.
"She's not going to win this one."
My father chuckles and says, "Love, I don't think you're going to win this one." I sit down next to my dad as January heads inside with my mum to check out the cupboards, and he nods in their direction. "What are you going to do? Do you know?" I let out a long breath. What am I going to do? That's exactly what I have to figure out. As in, what the fuck am I going to do because I'm in love with a woman who doesn't want what I want at all? I don't know. I don't know. And I don't know. Do I just let go of everything I thought I wanted? Say goodbye to my dreams? Let them fall to the ground and melt like snow when it touches concrete?
"I have no idea," I say.
"Maybe you need some time to think about what you want."
Time. That sounds wise. But can I sort it out when I'm tugging her into my bedroom every night, making love to her, whispering sweet nothings, and falling mercilessly in love? Ethan stays behind at my parents' house for the night. On the ride home, January must sense that my mind is far away. Once we pull into my driveway, she runs a hand through my hair, her eyes concerned.
"What's going on?"
That's the issue. I'm used to knowing what I want. Used to understanding my heart. Accustomed to making decisions. And I don't know a damn thing anymore. The more I'm near her, the harder it is to understand what I want and what I'll regret. There's no point mincing words. I turn, meet her gaze, and speak the truth.
"I think I need a few days to figure out what's going on with us."
She blinks, parts her lips, gulps. When she speaks, it's in a strangled voice.
"A break? You need a break?"
I cup her cheek, sadness flooding my entire being. But I need time. I need to know what to do, how to change, what to change.
"I do. I do need it because I want all of these things and you don't. And I can't keep falling in love with you if you don't want the same things I do."
There it is. I've told her that I'm in love with her. She swallows roughly, licks her lips, then says,
"A timeout is a good idea, then. Because I'm in love with you too."
Chapter 25. January. The next morning, Betty waves me over as I'm outside checking on my flowers.
"January,"
she says, beckoning me as she waters her garden. It isn't drowning this time. I head over to her house, stopping at the white fence. She waggles her eyebrows, her slate blue eyes twinkling with mischief.
"Inquiring minds want to know, is his tush just as biteable as it looks from a distance?"
I shake my head, frowning, unable to joke about biteable olives with our break status tugging me down. "You're not going to get that out of me," she tuts.
"Please, do an old woman a solid."
"You're not old. You're, what, 62? I ask, hoping to divert her attention away from Liam and me, especially since I don't think there is a Liam and me anymore. I don't know how to cross our impasse, and it's breaking my heart.
"Please, I am 61, don't age me up."
She moves the hose over her peonies, drizzling a little bit of water on them before she sets it down on the lawn, heads to the faucet, turns it off, then joins me again.
"I had my daughters young, just like you with Wednesday, and we are close too."
"That is true." Missy often tells me how well she gets along with her mom since they're only 23 years apart. Betty wags a finger at me, but I want to know about the olive scale. I don't want to go there, so I sidestep. Your lawn looks great. She narrows her eyes. Are you having trouble in paradise? Missy and I were glad that you were the one who got him. But does that matter if I can't keep him? I'm not sure it'll last. She gives me a look of utter disbelief. How could it not last? You can fix anything in the house, and he can take care of all your pets. You're both hot to trot for each other. What problems could you possibly have? Problems like life goals, like wants, like the future. I give an easy shrug. Who knows? I try to keep it light and breezy. This isn't the time or the place to break it all down. Oh, she says as if the light bulb has flicked on, like she's figured it all out. Kids, you want more and he doesn't? I let out a long breath, wishing she hadn't nailed it in reverse, but weirdly glad that I have an outlet. More like the other way around, but I think maybe I should change my mind. Ah, she says with a sage nod. You thought you were done, but now you aren't sure? I didn't intend to have this conversation with my neighbor, but sometimes it's easier to voice deep truths to someone who's not regularly in your life, who only appears in it tangentially. Saying these words to Betty helps me understand them, helps them take shape. I'm 37. It's not that I'm too old to have kids. I might be able to, but I also don't know, and there is so much to consider. I take a beat, collecting my thoughts. And yet, he's kind of amazing. But you have a career to think about now, too, she points out, drawing up her shoulders like she's calling on all her woman strength. You've started building your business. I had my girls when I was young, and by the time I was 41, they were out of the house and I was able to start my flower shop. That had been my dream, something I always wanted to do. Would I have been able to do that if I'd had another baby? Who knows? There are all sorts of things to think about. But I'm glad I opened my shop and glad I had something of my own. Glad, too, that you didn't have to bring a baby with you to the store? She flashes a sympathetic smile. Yes, dear, that too. What would it be like to have a baby again? How would I get any work done? Would I take the baby to jobs? Get a nanny? Would Liam stay home? The practical stuff is so daunting and terrifying. But it's worth considering because he wants it. I try to picture what it'd be like to be pregnant again. Would he want to start right away? What if we wanted to be together just as a couple for a few years? Then I might not be able to get pregnant. Would he resent me if I couldn't? I don't share all of this with Betty. It's too personal. I don't have the answers to any of these questions. But then, an adorable towhead toddles from inside the house onto the front porch, stretches and says, Nana, I woke up from my nap. Can we draw? Betty turns around, her smile lighting up her features. Of course, sweetheart. Anything you want, my little love bug. As Betty walks over to the porch, I can't resist. I join her. When she picks up her little granddaughter and brings her close, nuzzling her hair, I get that feeling in my chest, the one I get when I'm holding a baby, a feeling a lot of women get, that feeling of wanting them. Betty must see it in my eyes because she turns to me and says, Nora's a sweetheart. Do you want to give her a little hug? Nora reaches her hands out, and I take her in my arms, close my eyes, and inhale that fresh, sweet smell. Could I truly do this? Not for him, but for me. That's the question, and I need to find the answer.
Chapter 26. Liam. My first patient on Monday is none other than the devil himself, Sol. But Maya doesn't seem as frazzled or as manic as she did on our date, or on her first visit to the clinic after our date. She made an appointment a few weeks ago and has been working through her cat's issues. She's calmer, more hopeful,
And Saul seems to be doing better too.
I've been able to leave the house a few times without him. I was able to go to the library,
she says with obvious enthusiasm. That's fantastic, I say, stroking the less devilish devil. He seems to be doing well. We talk more as he purrs. And when we're done, she tucks him into a cat carrier.
Thank you for that date last month. Even though it didn't go anywhere, it made me realize something.
What's that?
That I needed to make a change. And I did.
I'm glad it was helpful to you. And I'm glad it was helpful to Saul.
The funny thing is, after I started seeing you about the cat, I met this guy online, and he's great. I went to dinner without taking Saul, then to a movie.
That's terrific progress. She hoists the carrier onto her shoulder.
If things hadn't gone wrong with you, I never would have met this new guy.
She pats the bag.
It's funny how things work out, isn't it?
Yeah, it is funny, I say, with a small smile. After the appointment, I take a lunch break, needing some exercise. So I ride to the town square in Duck Falls and lock up my bike. But the way things work out feels less funny and more frustrating and annoying. It feels like things should work out in an entirely different way. I still don't know what that way is, but it shouldn't be this. I wander the town square, marinating on where I am in life, where I want to be. I pass the boba tea shop, and Nina waves to me. I stroll by the wine bar, and Oscar says hi as he sets up for the afternoon. I venture by the hair salon, where January's friend gives me a nod. Do I miss New York? Yes, but no. All these people, all these places feel right to me. That ought to be enough. At the corner, I spot the hardware store, a reminder that I need to snag a new light bulb to replace one that burned out. Best to focus on practical matters, not the ruminations of a half-empty heart. I head inside and say hello to the two men who run the shop, Travis's dads. David points me to the light bulb section. I grab one, head to the counter and say, "This is all I need today." "Are you sure you know how to install it? Do you need help with that, Vet?" David teases. "I think I can figure it out. Connects to the dew claw, right?" "Sure, but if you can't get it sorted, you just be sure to ask the carpenter next door," David says, a little flirty, like he enjoys being in on the news about January and me. Even though there is no January and me. Not like there was that day we ran into them. I keep my grin fixed on my lips. "Sure, will do, mate." He rings me up, hands me the light bulb and says, "We're having a barbecue next weekend. If you'd like to join us, it would be fun. The boys can play baseball." "I'd love that." I leave, content that I'm making friends in this new town, right along with my son. That ought to be a good thing. Plus, we're going to the dog shelter this weekend. That'll be a great thing. And even though my dad is facing plenty of challenges, he's holding up. I see him often. Mum too. All good things. My clients are great. My practice is thriving. My son is happy. The glass should be all the way full. But it feels all the way empty. I wander through the square some more, looking at my phone briefly when I see a text from Aunt Jane, thanking me for my latest pic of Ethan splashing in the pool. Aunt Jane.
"Miss you, love. But life in California seems to be treating you well."
I'm not entirely sure what to say, so I reply with a smiley face. Then I delete the emoticon, because I'm not a smiley face guy. Instead, I type another answer. "Liam, miss you too." That feels true at the moment. I click to my next text. "Oliver, did you ever figure out your fox issues?" This conversation requires a phone call. I ring him on FaceTime. He's in his Manhattan office, wearing a suit, and I'm in my scrubs. He looks me up and down. "I see we're both in our work uniforms." "Seems we are." My tone is sullen, and I hate it, but I can't change it. "You also look ridiculously sad. Are you still being a complete twat about relationships?" I scrub a hand across the back of my neck, looking around.
I think I might be.
He laughs.
Yeah, you probably are. Didn't you break up with a woman you're in love with? I sort of did. Judging from the look on your face, that was sort of dumb. Or maybe all the way dumb. So why'd you do it then? We don't want the same things. But even as I say it, that urge to expand my family, to add a baby to the mix, doesn't feel as important as it did when I met her, not when faced with the thought of losing her. He arches a brow. Are you absolutely certain about that? Am I certain? I thought I was, but I don't know anymore. When I don't say anything, Oliver fills the silence. It seems when you find somebody you love, really love, especially when you've never been in love before, you ought to try and make it work, Liam. There's some serious wisdom in there, but I'm not actually sure how to mine it. I hop on my bike and go back to work, because that I can do.
Chapter 27, January. When I finish my job the next day installing kitchen cabinets for LaTanya Smith, Wednesday and I head to town, both of us on a mission. Boba tea and YouTube channel planning for her and Audrey, advice and sympathy from Alva for me. As we near the salon, Wednesday taps her wrist. Did you know it's time? Time for what, seeing Audrey? Yeah, obviously. She pats my shoulder. Ripley, Mom. Ripley, keep up with me. This weekend, I say, doing my best to stay cheery for my girl. When she spots Audrey snapping photos of some ducks in a pink wading pool, she waves and rushes off to hang with her bestie. I go to see Alva at the salon. She's closing up, and I sit in one of the chairs, look at her in the mirror, and sigh heavily. I'm a sandbag made of lead. My heart is stone. My head hurts. Talk to me, babe. The saddest sigh in the state of California falls from my lips. I held this sweet little girl the other day, Betty's granddaughter, and it made me think maybe I could do this. I just don't want to lose him. She stares at me in the mirror, an intensity in her brown eyes as she tucks her sleek black hair behind her ears. You shouldn't have children for another person. I know that, but I like kids. Hell, I love kids. I don't sound as chipper as I want to. No doubt there, but just because you have one, just because you love them, doesn't mean you should have another one for a man. It's not fair to the kid, or to the man, or to you. My chest aches, a nagging, insistent pain. But I love him too, and I don't know what to do. If you don't know if you want children, you can't make yourself want them for him. I want to want them. I think maybe I could. When I held Betty's granddaughter, I thought maybe I could do it. She turns around, facing me so we're no longer looking in the mirror. Somehow, stripping away that reflection makes the conversation more intense. She parks her hands on the armrests of the salon chair. But you don't know for sure, right? My throat hitches. I don't think I know for sure. But I don't want to lose him. I love him. I love him so much. More than I thought I would. So much that I'd marry him if he wanted. I say, and she lights up with glee. So maybe I should be willing to have kids. The glee winks off, replaced by a stern stare. Have you told him any of this? How you feel about kids? About him? About a future? Not even the marrying part, but the being willing to be a partner part. The I love you and want to be with you always part. Have you spoken to him about how you feel? I flash back through our conversations because I have a sinking feeling I've said the opposite to Liam. That day at IKEA, he asked if I wanted to settle down. I said I was still working up the nerve to adopt a cat. He asked if my life was Wednesday and me against the world. I said yes, and I liked it that way. I can focus on my business, on my kid. I don't have to worry about a man. On the porch swing, he asked what were the chances of meeting someone who wants the same things you do. I said small, and we toasted to the limited odds of it happening. But we never really acknowledged that it could be us, that we could want the same thing at the same time. I don't know if he wants what I want, but I know this. I haven't told him that nearly everything I said to him that day at IKEA has changed. I no longer want to be me against the world. I no longer want to never settle down. I no longer want to avoid love. And I haven't told him either that this, us, does feel like the right place at the right time and with the right person, too. Maybe I've been seeing everything the wrong way. Maybe wanting the same things isn't about more kids. Maybe it's about commitment, about being a family. In a burst of clarity, I wonder if I've been wrong about what he wants all along, if I've been guessing, and if maybe what he wants is precisely the thing that I can give him, a promise that I could be his person.
Chapter 28. Liam. Ethan wakes me up early on Saturday, like it's Christmas morning. He tugs my shirt.
Can we go now?
Yawning, I flip onto my side.
Give a man a Saturday morning lie-in, would you?
You're zero fun.
That is true.
But a cup of English breakfast, a shower and a shave later, we're at the animal shelter. He's bouncing, brimming with more energy than I've ever seen in him. He checks out nearly every dog. A beagle named Roxy, a golden retriever mix named Gecko, and some kind of white fluffy mutt named Button. At the end of the next row of kennels, he stops cold, and in a hushed whisper, he says,
Look!
I follow his gesture to see a min-pin dachshund at the back of a cage, cowering in the corner, shaking. Ethan runs to her. I follow. He beckons me to come even closer, pointing at the brown and tan dog with the bat ears and big eyes.
Oh, Dad, look at her. She's so cute and so scared.
She's absolutely adorable. He stares at her a little longer, then turns to me.
Can we get her?
I blink, surprised. She doesn't seem like the type of dog you'd want. She's not a border collie mix or a shepherd mix like Katrina. I thought that was what you wanted. He shakes his head adamantly, pointing to the pooch in the corner, all 10 pounds of her by the looks of it.
I want that dog, he says.
And it's the most earnest, honest thing anyone has ever said in the history of the world. He sweeps his gaze back to me, his eyes big and blue and vulnerable.
She's just sitting in the corner. And she's shaking, and she looks sad. Just look at her.
She does look sad. She also looks like she needs a home. I take a look at the index card describing her. She's 2.5. The woman who runs the rescue walks by, dreadlocks in her hair. She stops and flashes us a warm smile, tossing her hair back over her shoulder.
I see you've met Ruby. She's a sweetheart. She's an owner surrender. Just came in the other day.
Owner surrenders can mean a number of things. From someone who was evicted to someone who didn't want the dog anymore. From sickness to behavior problems. Is there any particular reason she was a surrender? The woman's expression shifts into a sad smile.
The man who had her went into hospice, so we took his dog.
My heart winces like someone has just tightened it with a rope, knotting it into the smallest shape possible.
Dad, can we give her a home?
I look at the dog again, this sweet, sad animal who no longer has a person, who probably wants a person more than anything, who wants love and a home. Isn't that all anyone wants? That's what I've given my son. That's why he's thrived, why he's happy, and why I am too. Just like that, the glass fills up. There is no longer a rope around my heart. Everything in it makes sense. My eyes well with a sheen of tears. One slides down my cheek.
Ethan must notice because he grabs my hand, squeezes it, and sets his head against my side. I wipe away the rebel tear. The woman says in a soft voice,
"He was very good to her. He loved her very much."
That doesn't do anything to help with the leaking eyeballs. I try to hold back the onslaught of emotions as I think about my son's mother and how much she must have loved Ethan for him to come to me so full of love already. Instead of tightening, my heart grows bigger. It swells like it needs more room, like it needs to run across the room, fling open the window, and let in more sunlight. Ethan pleads one more time.
"Can we get her, please? She needs us."
One more peek at the sweet, scared little Min Pin Dachshund, and I am certain his words are the only ones that matter. "She does need us." The woman steps into the kennel, picks up the nervous dog, and carries her to us as we sit on a bench. She hands the dog to Ethan. He wraps his arms around her. Ruby's still trembling, but she gazes up at him like she's found her home. She licks his face, and a boy falls in love with a dog. He laughs and nuzzles her, then whispers in her big, floppy ear,
"I think you were happy before. I think you had steak and played with frisbees, and you went for swims and you took long walks, and you panted when it was hot out, and you smiled when you were happy, and you slept under the covers."
Yes, the windows are open, the doors too. Because now I know what January was trying to tell me, what I wanted to believe but didn't quite know how. You can write your own narrative. You can tell your own story. I squeeze his shoulder, emotions flooding me, clogging my throat. "She sounds a lot like you before we met."
"That's why she's our dog, right?"
I haul him and Ruby in for a huge hug, boy and dog. "She's our dog, and you're my son." We go home with Ruby, and along the way, Ethan changes her name to Steve Trout. It's the worst possible name for so many reasons, but I don't care. Once we're home, we go through the garage so he can hunt for a frisbee.
"I'm going to teach her how to catch it," he says.
I can't wait to see her new skills. But when I pop onto the front porch to check the mail, I'm a bit distracted. I find a Pyrex dish by the door. It's full of pink cupcakes. There's a note on top. With eager fingers and a wildly beating heart, I reach for the note, then unfold it. I am a forensic scientist. I am a crime scene investigator. And this handwriting is the only one I want to see. It's the handwriting of the woman I want to be my person.
"I made these for you, and I have something to tell you. I love you. I want to talk to you, and I have things to say to you, and I want to say them before I lose you, because I don't want to lose you, and I will do just about anything to keep you."
I pop into the backyard and tell Ethan to keep an eye on Steve Trout. But he doesn't even need me to tell him, since he has yet to take his eyes off her. With long, determined strides, I make my way across the yard, and I knock on January's door. Chapter 29. Liam. She looks gorgeous. No surprise. She looks hopeful too, but nervous. She looks like I feel.
"Hi,"
she says, sounding wobbly. "I want to talk to you," I blurt out. Words tumble from her.
"Did you get the cupcakes? My note?"
"Yes, and I loved it. All of it," I say, and her lips relax into a gorgeous smile. "And I have so much to say too, starting with, I got a dog." She clasps her hand to her mouth, excitement lighting up those gorgeous blue eyes.
"Tell me all about the dog."
"That's the thing. I want to tell you about the dog. I want to tell you a million things. But I want to tell you something first. And it's this. I did it all wrong when I told you I was falling in love with you." I smack my forehead. "Who the hell says
I'm falling in love with you, and then breaks it off.
She laughs slightly.
I'm a daft idiot, I say.
No, you're not.
I reach for her hand, and she lets me take it.
I am in love with you. I love you. I want to be with you.
Her eyes go wide, and then tears start to fall from them.
I love you too. And I want that too. But, Liam, I have to tell you something.
Tell me. But I know that whatever it is, it'll be fine. Because I know what I want. And it's her. I'm pretty sure that's what she's offering. Still, a gentleman should listen. She takes a deep breath.
I know you want more kids. And I've thought about that a lot. And whether I want them. I want to tell you that if it's important to you, we can talk more about it. But I'm not sure my feelings about more children will change. But that's the only thing I'm not sure about. I'm 37 years old, and I've never been in love. And then you came into my life, and I am wildly in love. I love you,
she says. And my heart does that thing again. It fills, it floods, it expands.
I love you so much,
I tell her. It feels so good to say that. January isn't done, though.
I'm so afraid that the way I feel won't be enough for you. But I'm going to tell you anyway. You're the one.
She grabs my shirt like she needs to be close to me, and I want her close.
I don't want to be just a woman against the world. I want it to be you and me against the world. You, me, and Wednesday and Ethan. I don't know if that's what you want. And it's scary and crazy to put myself out there. But as I look back on the last month, I think I've given you the impression that I don't want any of that.
Her words come in a rush of emotions that I want to cup in my hand, to hold, to keep safe.
But now it's all I want. You're all I want. Is that enough for you? If we don't have more children? Is it enough if it's you and me and us and the dog?
I laugh, grab her and wrap her in my arms.
Yes! That's what I want. And I'm stupid for not having realized it before. I'm incredibly foolish for missing it.
I pull back, and she looks up at me, her expression lovely and vulnerable.
Are you sure? How can you say that?
I run a hand along her hair.
You are enough for me. You're so much more than enough for me.
It took me adopting this dog to realize that I was looking at everything the wrong way. I thought I needed to have more children. I thought about how I missed 7 years of my son's life, and if I had another kid, I wouldn't miss a moment. But then you said something to me. I pause for a breath as the memory rushes back, one that was never far from the surface. You said to write our own narrative, and that didn't fully resonate until today when we got this dog. And I realized that writing her story was all we could do. And we did. And it's a great story. And everything became clear. She grins, like she's wildly happy too.
What became clear?
What I wanted was not to have missed the first 7 years of Ethan's life. But that can't change. And having another kid won't make up for it. But I don't need to make up for it. I have to let it go. And I did. All I want to do is live my life with him and with you and your daughter, and I want to write our story together.
Me too,
she says, her soft words hooking into my heart. I take her hands, holding them tight. That's all I want now. I want to love my son. I want to love this amazing woman in front of me. And I want to love this dog we just adopted. I have so much love inside me. And I want to give it to all of you. And honestly, I'd love to give it to your daughter if she'll let me.
You would? Really?
Her voice trembles like she can't believe I'm truly saying this. But I am, and I mean every word. I am perfectly good with this. With the family we already have. All I want is not to miss a second of what comes our way. I don't want to miss a minute of what we will have together.
Because I know we can have an amazing life. And I know we can have an amazing family. You and me and Ethan and Wednesday and Steve Trout and Ripley.
She arches a brow in question.
Steve Trout?
I wave my hand.
He named the dog Steve Trout. It's a girl. None of it makes any sense.
It makes perfect sense. He named the dog after someone he likes.
Like you're going to do with Ripley. When you're ready, say the word. You will have free vet care for life, even at-home service. I'm a cat whisperer, you know. Sol is living proof of that.
She laughs.
That's a really good promise.
See? That's what I want. I want to promise you things and deliver on them. I want to promise you my heart and give it to you. I don't want anything more than what I'm already hoping we can have together. Do you want that?
And I wait for her answer, wildly hoping that it's going to match what I learned today. She lifts her hands to my face.
I love you, Liam. I want to be with you. I want to be the person that you came here and found. And I think we could have a great family together with the family we already have. And I want to put my heart on the line for you. So yes, I want that.
I draw her against me, looking around at everything that we have, a wonderful embarrassment of riches. This is all I could ever want. I kiss her. On the scale of kisses, it's right there at the top. It's long and soft and slow. It's passionate and sensual and full of love. When we break apart, she gasps. The excited kind of gasp, not the sexy kind.
What is it? Wednesday wants to get a cat. Let's make it a double today. Wanna go find Ripley?
I grin, and it takes over my whole being. The four of us. She rolls her eyes.
Obviously.
Such cheek, I say, shaking my head. She grabs my hand, slides it around to her ass, and whispers,
You love my cheeks.
Cracking up, I answer, So very much. Later that day, the five of us squeeze into her truck, Steve Trout on Ethan's lap, an inseparable pair already, return to the same shelter, and find an adorable black and white tuxedo cat. January strokes the cat's chin and says,
You're Ripley.
I look at the cutie and say, Looks more like a 5 o'clock. Ethan suggests, Dolphin. Wednesday shakes her head.
You're all wrong. She's the hacker.
It's a perfect name. And I think I might have a life that's pretty damn close to perfect, too.
Chapter 30. January. What's better than realizing the guy next door is the love of your life? What's better than him feeling the same way about you? One thing only. Sex with that guy that night. I sneak over because it's fun to sneak over. After opening the door slowly and ever so quietly, he tugs me inside, then brings his finger to his lips. Is Ethan awake? I mouth, surprised at the secrecy routine, since his kid is the king of sleeping like a log.
Steve Trout does not sleep as soundly as Ethan.
Ah, I whisper, nodding, and we both tiptoe across the living room to Liam's bedroom. He shuts the door and jerks me against him. He's not soft and gentle. He's ravenous and demanding. His hands rope into my hair and he tugs hard on my strands, dropping his fantastic lips to my neck, kissing me greedily, kissing me like he's starving. In seconds, his lips are on my mouth and he devours me. I am liquid in his arms. Bliss flows through me. Desire surges over my skin, drowns my bones, my cells. My hands travel up his chest, grabbing at him just as he grabs at me. And soon we are two frenzied, fevered creatures, driven mad with longing, with lust, and now with love. He lifts me up, hooks my legs around his waist and carries me to the bed.
It's been too long.
I know. It was a miserable week. I climbed the walls. I whisper as I tear at his t-shirt, jerking it over his head.
That should never happen again.
He says, stripping me in seconds flat. Yes, don't ever do that again. I say, shuddering as his hands roam down my naked body, gliding over my breasts, my belly, my thighs. He steps back, undoes his jeans, then returns to me, parting my legs.
You have my word. I will always be here to fuck you.
He growls as he moves between my thighs, settling there, then notching the head of his cock against me. I arch up, eager, hungry. My hand darts out, grabbing his length, guiding him home.
So greedy.
I know what I want, I say.
You do, and I love that about you.
He says, sliding into me, then groaning as he fills me. Pleasure tears mercilessly across my entire body as Liam thrusts into me. His right hand slides down my leg, grips my knee, and pushes it up high against my chest. Yes, I moan, grabbing his ass, holding on tight. I love this, I whisper, words falling from my lips, sensations spreading wildly through every molecule. But those words don't feel like enough. And even though I never thought I'd be one of those heat-of-the-moment people, I also never thought I'd feel so much for one person, and I need to say what's in my heart. I lift my hands, hold his stubbled face, and meet his gaze. He slows down.
You okay, love?
There it is again. Love. I love this. I love you, I say, and it comes out needy, breathy, and full of passion.
Love you so much,
he answers. And that's all. That's all I needed to say. But saying it makes the most amazing sex somehow even better. Because it's fucking, and it's making love, and it's forever. It's all of those things I didn't think I wanted. And it's everything I love having. When we come together, lost in each other, we pant, moan, and collapse. I murmur, lazily stroking his back. You're kind of a sex machine.
And this is a problem.
I laugh, shaking my head. I like machines. He eases out of me.
Good, because this machine is always ready to do the job,
he says, then heads to the bathroom and returns seconds later with a warm, wet washcloth to clean me up. After he tosses it in the hamper, he returns to my side, drawing me close.
Was that makeup sex?
Kind of, I whisper.
Should we break up again to have it?
I swat his chest. Take that back. He laughs, then presses a soft kiss to my shoulder as something scratches at the door. Or rather, someone with four legs. He rises and opens the door slightly. Steve Trout bounds in, leaps onto the bed, and sniffs my shoulder. I'm glad that's where her snout goes. I laugh. Your dog likes the way I smell.
The dog has excellent taste.
Liam returns to the bed again, looping an arm around me and the dog, too, who is tucking herself into my armpit.
You should sometime, you know, spend the night,
he says. I know. I should. Maybe when Wednesday goes to Audrey's house for a sleepover. I don't mind slipping out for an hour or so when she's home, but I can't stay long. He sighs heavily.
If only there was a way to solve that problem.
I shoot him a curious look. Like build an underground tunnel between our homes?
That, or move in together.
He says, flashing me a you know you want to grin. But I have a house, I say, though even as I say it, I do love the idea of being with him every day and night. After all, that's what we both said we wanted.
Yeah, so do I,
he says, tapping his chin.
Hmm, I like mine, and you like yours. Fine, we'll build a concourse between them, like two terminals at the airport.
I laugh. Are you really asking me to move in?
Woman, I told you I want to spend the rest of my life with you. Yeah, soon I'd like it not to be in separate homes.
The thought should scare me, but it doesn't. Not at all. Not in the least. I want all of that with him. With all of us. I tap his nose. Why don't we look for a place that's ours, then?
That sounds like a brilliant plan from a brilliant woman.
He takes a beat.
Who wants to get in my trousers every night?
I roll my eyes. Duh, you are good in bed.
As advertised.
And in the kitchen.
Admit it, I'm a catch.
I kiss him again. You're a manicorn.
That sounds dirty and sweet at the same time.
Just like you. He gives me yet another kiss.
And just like you too, love.
Love. Yes, that's what he calls me in and out of bed. And I love it all the time. Because it turns out he's the right person, in the right place, and at the right time.
Chapter 31. Liam. The next few months fly by in a blur. I treat patients, spay cats and dogs, administer shots, and tend to both broken and full hearts at my practice, all in a day's work as a vet. I visit my dad a lot. He's making the best of things, with laughter and jokes and lots of long conversations. Not only with me, but with Ethan, though Ethan is often distracted by the need to ringmaster his three-dog circus, taking Steve Trout into the backyard with the musical girls, tossing frisbees to all of them, and inviting lots of face licks. So the conversations fall to Mum and me, or January and me, or to Wednesday. Funny thing I didn't see coming. Wednesday gets on great with my dad. She reads articles to him on new trends in website design, then blog posts on ethical hacking trends, and she likes to describe the sites she's working on to him. It helps her design, she says, to have to give them words so he can visualize them. And he likes hearing about it. And likes weighing in too, offering her tips now and then. Some of them she takes. Mum paid January to fix the cupboards. She was determined to win that battle. But January won too, giving the money immediately to a Reading for the Blind charity. We do other things together, like go to parents' nights at both the elementary school and high school, and to dinner at the sandwich shop we all like, and to the bowling alley. January beats us all at bowling. She's good with her hands. And those skills intrigue Ethan, it turns out. He asks her to help him build a doghouse for Steve Trout. So one day in November, they go to the hardware store run by his friend's dad's and pick up the wood and other supplies. Then she spends the day teaching him how to build. Honestly, it's the best thing I've ever seen in my entire life. Especially since Steve seems to dig the doghouse for about a minute, which makes us all laugh. The next day, Wednesday asks me to teach the hacker a trick. Cats aren't very good at tricks, I say.
I know that, but how about a high five? I have a potential client who makes cat toys, and I want to send a video to impress her to win the deal.
By all means, then, let's do it. A few days and several thousand pieces of tuna later, and the hacker can work a high paw like no one's business. By the time the holidays roll around, the woman I love begins work on a new expansion project. Not that. She hires some additional contractors and begins expanding the attic in my home. In the end, we decided we liked this house. The pool helps a lot. But teenage girls need more space, so January devised the brilliant idea to make this home bigger and then rent hers next door. As for that accent wall she wanted, she painted one wall in the living room pink. My bachelor pad vibe has been crushed, julienned, and chopped to pieces, and I couldn't be happier. One fine day in December, as she's finishing up work in the attic, I pop upstairs, enjoying the sight of her in her work clothes. What can I say? January and her hammer have always done it for me. I rap on the doorframe. She must see me out of the corner of her eye,
because she hits pause on her phone and removes an AirPod.
Are you trying to finagle a quickie?
Is a quickie an option? Because sure. She laughs.
It's usually an option.
I'll take it then. But mostly I wanted to know if you wanted to go for a drive when you're done.
A drive?
She asks suspiciously. Yeah, that thing you do in cars and trucks? She rolls her eyes.
Sure. But don't think I don't know that you're trying to take me to some lover's lane and park.
I shrug sheepishly. Maybe I am. Later, after she showers, we hop in the truck and go for a drive. Something we used to do when we were first dating. Something we've kept up. It's fun sneaking off. Especially in a small town full of rolling hills, wineries, and train tracks that occasionally glitter. Seems fitting. I point to a side road that runs along the tracks. Let's go there.
As you wish,
she says. And soon we pull over, get out, and walk along the tracks while the sun dips in the sky. The days are shorter now, but this being California, the weather is still warm enough for a walk without jackets. As we wander, we talk about our plans for the holidays, seeing friends and family, being together, and all that good stuff. The plans are nothing out of the ordinary. It's just us, doing life, living it every second, which makes it all the more fitting that this moment is the one where I stop, tug her close, and drop to one knee. I waste no time. I cut to the chase. I ask the question we've both known was coming. Will you marry me? She laughs. Then she sinks down to the ground.
I thought you'd never ask.
Hey, it's not like I waited that long, I say, cupping her cheeks.
3 months. Such an eternity.
You knew it was coming.
I did. But I'm still happy, Liam.
Me too. I reach into my pocket, take out a box, and show her the ring that Alva and Wednesday helped me pick out last month. The joking ceases when January sees it. The diamonds catch the light from the fading sun. They're all laid out in a platinum band, ideal for a carpenter.
Oh my God, it's perfect for me,
she says, a smile lighting up her whole face as she gazes at the ring. Pride suffuses me, along with love, certainty, and so much happiness. I wanted it to be one you could wear while working. I want it to be one that makes you happy, that feels like yours. She swallows, twin tears slipping down her cheeks as she holds my face.
You feel like mine, and I love you.
And I love you. But let's put that ring on. She lets go, waves a hand in front of her face, like she needs to settle her tears, then exhales. I slide the ring onto her finger, and we admire the diamonds. When she lifts her head, she whispers,
What are the chances you meet the right person at the right time in the right place?
If he moves next door to you, I'd say they're pretty damn good. She grins, gazes at the ring once more, then says,
I'll take those chances every day for the rest of my life.
Good, because I want to spend the rest of my life with you. And we kiss as the sun sets over this small town that's become my new home, where all the glasses are full. Epilogue. Liam. By the next summer, the hacker can sit on command, roll over, play dead, and go for walks, all thanks to Wednesday.
I hacked all the dog training tips I could find and engineered them for cats,
she says one Saturday morning as we take the pets for a stroll. Steve can do all those things too, and she can sit up and beg and shake, so I'm kind of winning, I point out.
That only makes me want to teach the hacker to retrieve radishes and bring them to your bed,
she counters. January laughs, giving me she got you eyes. Ethan laughs.
Do it, please. That would slap so hard.
I'd pay good money to wake up with broccoli or radishes next to my fiancé.
January says, reaching for my hand.
Not fiancé for much longer, I add. In fact, a few hours later, in the town square with my mum and dad, my sisters, their kids, January's family, and all our friends looking on, including Oliver, Summer and Aunt Jane from New York, plus Alva, Audrey, Missy and Betty, the woman I moved next door to, walks down the grass, joins me in the gazebo, and hands the bouquet of daisies to her daughter. When the Justice of the Peace asks if I promise to love, honor and cherish January for the rest of my life, I say yes, and my heart soars when she says the same. And now the rings, the Justice of the Peace says. My son hands them to me. I slide a band on January's finger, matching her diamond band, and she slides one on me. Then I kiss the bride as the ducks wade in the pink pools and glitter sparkles on the pavement, and I am happy with all the family I have, living every moment and loving every second of it. The End. Author's note: Oliver and Summer's Romance is available in Dear Sexy Ex-Boyfriend.
This has been an Audible original, produced by Audible Originals, written by Lauren Blakely, performed by Vanessa Edwin and Shane East. Executive producers: Rose Hilliard and Kat Lambrix. Acquisition and development: Joanne Peretz. Vice President of Audible Studios: Mike Charzik. Editor-in-Chief, Audible Original Publishing: David Blum. Copyright 2020 by Lauren Blakely. Sound recording copyright 2020 by Audible Originals, LLC.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.